I wanted to talk about today an experiment called Universe 25. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Is that the one with the mice?
Yes,
and
with the rat.
Yes, yes, I have.
Well, I thought that would be a pretty interesting one to go over.
Cool.
So, pretty much this experiment happened a long time ago, like in the 70s, and it was this guy who took a bunch of mice and he put them in a box. I think he put four pairs together, four couples. And it was supposed to be like the Garden of Eden for a bunch of rats. And they had unlimited food, unlimited water, and the only limitation they had was physical space. And so then he just watched them, and they duplicated and multiplied until there were 2,000 rats in this box, and then everything fell apart.
It wasn't a small box, right? It was a pretty large. I've seen
like
pictures of him standing in it.
10 by something. Or around mm-hmm. that. So it's not like a house, but 2,000 mice are a lot of mice. They were all like in this box together, and they started, it was I guess a study of the psychological effects that overcrowding can do, and they became sexually deviant and started to become cannibals, and the mothers stopped raising their young. And after that, it all fell apart. And you would think that after a whole bunch of these rats died, that the ones that were still alive would have like gone back to some semblance of normalcy, but they didn't. They never really formed those social bonds that they had to have to survive to begin with. And they just went from 2,000 rats hit their peak, and then they went extinct. And they never ran out of food. They never ran out of water. They didn't have crazy disease running through. They died because they couldn't take care of themselves, and they couldn't.
Did they actually
social
go fully? They actually like went fully extinct to zero.
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that part of the experiment. I found it really interesting. What did they call themselves? Like the pretty rats, and like all they would do is like
the
groom themselves.
Rats, yeah.
Yeah. I thought that had some interesting parallels to our society. What do you think the cause of it is? What is your? I know there's several different theories as to why that happens.
Well, I think they couldn't live a normal life because somebody else would always be fighting, kind of like natural just competition. But when you have this natural competition in an unnatural environment, you get like the bigger rat just fighting and for no reason because he thinks he has to. He thinks he has to fight over the food even though it's unlimited. And so then the weaker rats are scared and it just is this like spiraling out of control.
Was it fighting that took him or was it just laziness and homosexuality that seemed to destroy him? Because my interpretation of
they
the
became
study
solitary
seems to be that
is what happened, and why they became solitary is hard to know. They're rats, but mm-hmm. I would think that they like they said that they would come out when all the other rats were sleeping for a while to try and get some alone time. But I think really their alone time was just a feeling of security. Like when I was looking at raising rabbits, kind of like they do hogs. I read this study about how if you feed a rabbit with a bunch of other rabbits in the same cage, they don't gain weight as fast because they're under more stress because they have some competition in the same cage. But if they're all in individual mm-hmm. cages, then they gain weight faster and they're less stressed. And they did like interesting studies by filling rabbits and watching how many times they twitch or whatever.
Huh. That's actually pretty interesting. What do you think that has, like, what do you think the implications of that are on our society? How much of that animalistic stuff is.
Well, I think mostly it's just a warning because you can say, well, mothers today aren't raising their children just like these rats, or there's homosexuals today just like these rats. And you can say, well, it's because we live in too densely populated cities, and maybe some of that's true, but. What you're saying, you're reducing people down to animals, and we're better than animals. We have this reason that we can overcome these things. And even the designer of the experiment wasn't saying humanity's doomed. He also observed rats coming up with new ways of creating little dens so that they felt like there was more space when there wasn't actually more space. And so I think we could take some things from that. Like, maybe it's not a good idea to jam-pack all the kids into a classroom like sardines and not let them move. But,
well, I have seen, there are people who have posited that we should move everyone into pretty big cities and then leave nature alone. And so there are kind of some new age thinkers who would have, what do they say, if we moved everybody into the state of Texas at the density of New York, we could leave the rest of the world, you know, unpopulated. And, I mean, Texas is a huge state, and that would be insane. Imagine just the buildup of stuff there. But I guess that it could definitely be taken as a cautionary tale, more than just a doomsday prophecy.
Yeah, well, and there's cities more dense than New York, and you can't say that they don't function to some extent. Like, I think there's a purpose for people to be in urban areas. Since the dawn of man, we've been congregating. But that shouldn't be your only existence. And
I just think in those areas it can be very easy to be more alone than you would be in a small town with your friends.
Well, Yeah, I think that's really true, because with these rats, a lot of it was they didn't have social connections, and it's so easy when you see 10,000 people walk by you in a day to just ignore all of them because you can't pay attention to every one of them.
And if you did, you'd be destroyed. So now you have this weird thing where you have to either pick a small clique there and hope that you can keep it together, be alone, or just take in thousands of people, which you can't do.
Yeah, you can't. You can't be friends with everybody you meet if you live in a large city.
Yeah, or even acquaintances. You know, sometimes
you can't. There's something you can't say hi to everybody you meet.
Yeah, yeah. There's something that's like, I'm not friends with all my neighbors, but I know who they are, and like at my new place, I'm meeting all the neighbors, and they're slowly stopping by, and eventually I'll know everybody, and that's just doesn't. You could live in an apartment building and not know the people three stories down, and live there for 40 years, and that'd be the case. I wonder what we could take for we both know tons of people, especially in our age demographic, a little older, a little younger, who've just basically given up. They're these kind of worker bees that they do what they have to, but they just very self-focused, and then they end up dying alone. Or I think it's been something that's been steadily growing, and that I see more and more of. Isn't it like people of this age are having less sex than ever before, except for the extreme deviants, and a lot of that's because of pornography or other.
I haven't actually heard that. I remember talking to a lady that worked at like the health department, and and she was saying that when she does the STD tests, in the past she would ask people how many partners you got, because you have AIDS, you gotta go tell everybody that you've slept with, and the answer was like 4 to 10 people maybe. And now people are coming in 20, 30, 50, 80 people that they say that they've slept with. So,
well, the studies show that women are having higher rates, but they're the same men, and then that men only have a small cohort of us that are being extremely what's the word for that? Promiscuous, while the rest are just not engaging at all. Yeah. I forget the percentages, but basically, so there's I wonder if that could be translated to anything in the rat model, because there are so many men who've basically resigned from society completely and don't seem to be pursuing. They don't seem to be actually like looking for relationships. They don't really seem
they're
to be trying to better themselves.
Grooming themselves.
Yeah. And I mean, there's women that I can think of that do the same, and they end up very sad. And I mean, I guess that's a type of extinction, but that seems to be happening more and more.
Well, I mean, you just look at the numbers, and our population is decreasing. So unless something changes, which I think humanity has the ability to change, and we're not just doomed to die like the rats. But if we just keep this degeneracy just going on its course, we are going to die out.
One of the things that's interesting with the rats, based on what you said, is that it seems that they died all the way out. So maybe, you see these societies, maybe there's not going to be many of us that actually survive it.
I think they said that, like, since the rats couldn't develop properly, they were kind of stuck in this infantile stage where they couldn't develop the relationships to mate. And then if they could, then they couldn't. They weren't good enough at nursing them to actually rear the young to adulthood.
Well, I mean, you could just look at today's social structure where most people are getting a lot of their time with others on computer or not at all. And it's getting harder and harder to know what the social cues are and how to move with our fellow people. Like, I spent most of high school just terrified that, like, if I even looked at a girl that there was going to be, you know, that I was, my life would be ended because of something. Because we grew up during that whole cancel time. Was it right before Me Too, but as it was still ramping up. And I grew up, like, genuinely afraid of that. And it held me back through, I would say, most of high school from having, like, healthy, like, normal, just relationships with the opposite gender.
Well, I think the huge part of the reason we don't have healthy relationships is we all get segregated into, you're an 11-year-old, you don't talk to 12-year-olds.
Oh, and I think that's a huge part of it. I mean, just look at the school to the rat model. Like, we're all getting stuck in this little thing without, like, a... For me, school never seemed to have a good end. Like, in sight, I was just forced to go to this place every day that I didn't want to be at, taught things that I wasn't interested in learning, and then there was no, like, good ending to it. I just got to go home, and I had to do it homework at home and then come back the next day. And my socialization was with just the psychos around me.
Wasn't it always rich when the teachers are just like, enjoy your childhood? Oh, I hated that.
Yeah. Yeah, none of that was fun.
You're only a child once.
Very few functional people really enjoyed school. The only people that I find that, like, just really, really miss school are people who had it very easy, or people that whose life is very messed up now. Like, that just really go back and romanticize their school kid years.
Well, I think there's a few people that just can't figure out how to navigate the world now that they're not in school, and they wish that they could understand it better like they did in the past.
But, I mean, arguably, that's just them being institutionalized. It's not necessarily that school was so great. It's just that
they want to go back to their institution.
Yeah, I mean, there's people who get out of prison and can't function, and the only thing they want to do is just go back because, despite it being bad, they know how the rules work there.
Yeah, that's something that you don't learn at school is how the real world works, especially considering that, like, discipline has been degraded over time to nothing. So now that you tell your kid, well, if you do something wrong, you get at most a slap on the wrist and you get to go and do it again.
Mm-hmm.
So then when you get out in the real world and you do anything that has consequences, you crash your car into somebody else, then you have to... How are you supposed to deal with that when all you were expecting was a little slap on the wrist and a new car?
Mm-hmm. If you were to rebuild the rat model, how would you try to avoid the problems that the original study had?
Well, I'm not really sure that rats are capable of overcoming those limitations.
So would it be making the struggle for food real? Would it be... I'm not saying, like, trying to make humanity in here. I'm saying just from the rat point of view, like, what do you have expanding universe? If you give them a warehouse and you start it, and then as they start to get crowded, you add and you add, would they be able to multiply at a rate? Is it the frontier and their ability to explore and get away from each other? Is it the fact that they couldn't build houses? Or was it that food was too easy? And I would really like to see the study redone. Of course, it's horrific that the suffering, you almost couldn't do it at this point.
That's an interesting thought. Was the free food that was just giving them no purpose? Because there's a statistic about, like, in the 1800s, 98% of people worked in agriculture, and now it's like 2%. So mm-hmm. now that food is free, basically... nobody starves in the U.S. unless they chose to.
Well, it seems to me that welfare is almost like a weird kind of net that mimics that thing where you get stuck in this free system and there a lot of these people have a way out. Like, I remember we would have people that would come work for us, but they could only work for cash, even though we'd offer them a full-time job because they were scared of losing government benefits. But they were going to get a full-time job and way more money than they'd have. But then they had this bottom safety net where they could literally just stay in a government house, collect a government food pension check, and not do anything, and it kept them from ever progressing. And I wonder if, obviously, they didn't have anywhere to progress, but if that stable thing where you could just sneak out at night, get a little bit of food, and spend the day grooming yourself kept them from ever achieving anything.
I saw yesterday that one of the most expensive fraud with the IRS is people claiming to have kids that aren't, I'm not sure if they're not legal citizens or if they're pretending to have kids that they don't have. And somehow the IRS gives you money for having kids.
And yeah, so well, I know there's tax write-offs.
It's just an, well, it's not a write-off, it's a credit where the government will send you money because you have kids and you didn't pay enough taxes that...
Yeah, I mean, that's what a lot of times what they'll say is, like, one of the things propping up the welfare state is that these single women are incentivized to have a bunch of kids.
That's just with... How did anybody think that was a good idea?
Which maybe that would save the rats. If you go back to the rat model, if there was some sort of incentive to rat moms to raise the kids good enough to stay alive, although these moms really aren't, and if you look at the welfare, a lot of these moms are not raising these kids well enough to survive very long. They might make it to adulthood, but usually you have the gang violence or incarceration rates or whatever else,
mm-hmm.
or drug deaths. I saw a study years ago about monkeys and cocaine. I don't know if you've done any reading on that.
Nope.
But basically there are these monkeys that were put under like extreme stress, and when the monkeys were in a good situation that they wouldn't even do the drugs. They would hang out with their families, they would do all this stuff. But then the researchers would put monkeys under extreme stress and they would start masturbating and they would choose to be alone with the drugs, and basically they were like showing that like there was quite a bit of link between like bad situations and self-destructive behavior. It was an interesting study, but I'm not prepared to talk about it in depth.
I think a lot of these things are real interesting because from religious people will think, well, you're just saying people are animals. And no, we're not saying people are animals. We're saying that this is what acting like an animal is. And you can choose to do that if you want, but then you are a beast. Yeah, so.
Yeah, well, that's part of, like, God gives us the ability to try to rise above that, to fight against our urges. But at the same time, those urges are animalistic. That's part of our fallen nature. And so understanding them helps us to better bring ourselves closer to Christ and go away from that fallen nature.
Yeah. Well, I definitely think having, like, a purpose, like with the rats that didn't have any reason to go do anything because they had their food, they had their water, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. I always find that if I have some work to do, I usually feel better about my day than if I just sat and did nothing.
I wonder if you had a controlled amount of food, like there was only enough food for a certain amount of rats, and you basically created war over it, if the adversity would keep the rats going better than just having unlimited food. Like, if you could contain, okay, well, people are going to starve, rats are going to starve, but randomly there's going to be enough food that they can fight over it, and 75 rats can survive on it. But this place can hold 2,000, so there's going to be some always starving and some always, like, fighting to protect and steal the food.
Well, that's kind of how nature works. But
I wonder if that alone, without a predator, without anything else, would keep them from going completely extinct. If you basically recreate Somalia, where there's at least enough reason to wake up in the morning,
yeah,
and there's a reason for the moms to try to like push and the males to try to defend all this like resources, if that would just cause destruction, or if that would actually cause them to survive in some other horrible state.
I bet they'd survive. That's just a guess, though.
Guessing, I would think that they would have enough adversity that they would stop caring about the grooming and everything else, and some weak ones would die, and some really strong ones would get control of the food.
Yeah, I think you would see, kind of like when you have like an algae bloom, you have,
mm-hmm.
they'd probably not fight for till they were almost all at the point of death, and then they would fight and come down to like maybe 10 rats, and then bounce back again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, so
are you planning on catching a bunch of rats and seeing if you can recreate the experiment?
No.
So I wonder, Does that change your thoughts on raising rabbits? I know we had talked before about maybe raising some rabbits in bigger containment. It seems like
I think it's still a decent idea. They do it in Europe. They raise rabbits in 10 or so, I think, in a pen. And it works. They just get slightly worse feed conversion because they don't eat as much, so they don't gain weight as fast, and so they take longer doing it, and then they don't get as good as feed conversion.
They're really strange with how much stress affects them. Like, because you look at chickens, and they're a species whose entire population, the lifespan ends in murder. Like, almost every chicken's life ends in murder, but you can keep them in captivity, and their feed conversion is still pretty good. They won't have many problems. Rabbits are pretty easy to keep alive, but if you do something just a little bit off, they will just kick off. And especially like a wild rabbit or a rabbit that maybe has a little bit more stress issues than others. They are so hard to keep alive. I don't see how it's evolutionary that good to die that easily from stress.
Yeah. Well, they weren't made to live in a tiny box with a bunch of other rabbits. So.
Yeah. I don't know, though. I just feel like there's other species that... But would they die of stress from other things? Because I feel like...
They wouldn't die from the stress. They just grew slower because... Yeah. I guess, like, if you're stressed, you don't eat as much. If you're happy and smoking pot, you eat more.
So give your rabbit edibles and they'll be fine. Huh. See, I was always told, and maybe I was lied to, that you couldn't take, like, wild rabbits into, like, you couldn't just catch them and raise them because the stress level would just kill them. But... That may be false.
I think I've heard of people doing it, but I don't think I've heard a lot of success stories.
Any other thoughts on the rats? It's definitely an interesting study. I wonder what made him think of it originally. If it was like just, oh, well, let's see if paradise works out, or if he... I wonder what his original thoughts on it were. Because I would imagine that he was probably knew enough about paradise to think that they would all... That would be the outcome, but maybe not, because now we all think that's what would happen. But at the time, they may have thought that we're just going to have thousands of rats living together in harmony because they have all the food they need.
I think he had to realize that something was going to happen, and I think other people took his study to push population control stuff, mm-hmm. and maybe he had that in his mind because I think it was part of the culture at that time. Because right then we had the baby boomers, and so that had been on his mind.
If food is the reason, and I would imagine that it's a large part of it, it's a great argument against universal basic income, isn't it?
Yeah.
As if the whole idea, like Andrew Yang, it gives people enough to survive, and then they can pursue their artistic talents. But maybe if you have no adversity and you can just survive, you're just going to lay there.
Yeah, that's a thought. I don't think anybody actually pursued it that way because what he was trying to study was space. And
mm-hmm.
But that's a good point. Food, just having nothing to do is a...
But the thing is, if you're surviving on just universal basic income, you're probably going to end up living in government housing because there's not... And they say that some of the most depressing places in the world are those Eastern Bloc apartments that are just all concrete and everybody lives on top of each other. Yeah. And, you know, they can't seem to get away.
I don't know if they would know what to do if they did get away. They could, nothing's stopping them from walking out into the countryside, but...
Well, at one point, I would guess that there would be KGB or such, but I guess now it's just the fear of the unknown. You could go be a vagrant, or you could stick with what you're used to.
You can stick with the free food and social net.
Mm-hmm. Because you might die. If you leave the social net, you might die. But if you don't, there's a good chance that you never really live either.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at all these corporate jobs that people get sucked into. If you, everyone who leaves them and is successful is like really happy, but there's a lot of failure stories too. Like if you've got that job at Amazon and you don't really know a lot and your parents never taught you to be a man and you walk away from it, you might end up under a bus, you know, like you might jump off a bridge because you didn't know what to do with your life. Like there is that tiny chance that you just can't figure things out. But if you just stay there, you're not really living either.
Yeah. Yeah, people were meant to do more than that.
Dying in the pursuit of something worthwhile is still better than living a whole life that's just nothing to write home about.
Yeah. Well, people were meant to... I think that's what Pope Francis was talking about when he said youth unemployment is the... He actually said youth unemployment is the greatest problem with society. And he might have misunderstood the question because he doesn't speak great English, but he...
I think that's pretty bad, but we are murdering a lot of people also.
Yeah, but I think that was what, I guess what he was trying to point out is that, like, he also talked about people having, like, a right to work. And it sounds weird from it sounds communist, saying you have a right to work. Mm-hmm. But you were put here to work.
Well, if you can look at that from another perspective, though, too. I mean, look at all the government regulation on normal things that people have been doing for the entirety of human... Like, if you want to start a butcher shop or you want to supply vegetables to your neighbors, all that stuff is regulated to the point that if you actually follow the rules, that it's almost impossible to start as a one-person,
without money.
Yeah. And basically, every small business that I look into that I think, oh, I could do that easily... Without a $100,000 investment in some sort of facility that makes FDA code, or without getting the right certifications for things that are, you know, the fact that you need a license to cut hair is such a crazy concept. And I know that's kind of, oh, well,
how does that matter? Today when I was at a job, we had a guy come up, and he said that he was thinking about getting some spray foam in his place, and that he was going to build this place for the government, but he was going to get the Amish to frame it, but he can't because they have something called prevailing wage, and the Amish don't pay prevailing wage, so they couldn't hire the Amish because they wouldn't pay their employees enough.
I think it's really interesting to see how the Amish make it, and I'd like to know more. I lived with the Amish for a while, and I didn't really learn a lot about their finances. I knew they made good money, but I knew they were also cheaper than almost anybody else. Like, when I take my horses to get shoes on them, the Amish are $35 for a set of shoes. And then I look at, like, what it costs to buy just the horseshoes, and I don't even understand how they make money. But yet they are. They have a nice farm. They have a good house, like, a nice house.
Well, I think they just... I think they do a really good job of minimizing their expenses, because so many people are like, well, I got to pay for my electricity and my propane and my internet, and the Amish don't pay for any of that. So.
Yeah, that's true. Like, they don't, I guess they also don't pay taxes on pretty much anything because it all goes through the church.
They still tax their land, don't they?
I think so. I think they have to pay tax.
I think they pretty much
land,
just pay like land tax, and that's all they got to do. Mm-hmm. So.
And they don't pay Social Security tax because they're never going to draw it, so they've managed to take themselves off that system as well.
Yeah, I was looking at the federal taxes I pay, it's like 60% Social Security, and as a young person in today's society, I have no hope of ever collecting that anyway. Not that I would want to.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah, it's such a crazy thing that's just like pulled out of your checks all the time. Well, we'll probably give this to you when you're older, but also we're keeping it for other old people, but we stole all the money several times over.
Yeah. We know the system's going to collapse by 2030 and you're not eligible till 2065, but...
But you better keep these boomers in their condos in Florida.
Pretty much.
But no, I think that their system is really interesting. One of the things that I've come to realize looking at their system is that you really can't do it by yourself. They start communities, they send at least 3 families, and then it goes to like 5 or something after a year. And that, you know, one of the hardest years is that first year getting started when you don't have the people around you who live the same to trade with.
But but they don't have overpopulation.
But if you're looking at trying to survive in that way, and then okay, well the government won't work with us for this, and I can't trade here, and I don't have the right credit card to go buy something after hours at the gas station, or you know, or be able to purchase the things that Walmart doesn't carry because it's only online now. That stuff can catch up to you really fast. And the fact that we still have to participate to some level in society, whether it be a farm loan, or which I think they usually try to buy their farms outright, although I have known of Mennonite people having loans on farms.
I read an article saying that Amish people have really good credit with the banks because they always pay them back. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that they do take loans, but they generally only take them if they're like pretty sure it's going to work out. Which is how everybody should do it, but it's interesting that they have a society that is countercultural but still managed to function within our own. Yeah. But it's also interesting to see the ones in there that are like, you know, getting over on everybody by using society, like our society stuff. So you mean you go in and it's like, well, I actually have a secret hidden cell phone, and that's really common.
I just think it's funny how, like, all the Amish think we're going to hell, and then they want us to buy their jelly or whatever.
Yeah. I don't like any group or religion that's, like, not trying to save the rest of us. And, like, anytime they're like, oh, well, we don't try to get anyone else to become Amish. It's like, well, what do you think I am? And they'll be like, you're English. Because like, they call everybody who's not Amish the English. We don't try to convert the English. It's like, well, why? They will, like, if you come to them and you're like, I want to be Amish, depending on the sect, you can join, but they never proselytize at all. Yeah. And if you really think that you have the truth of Christ and that you're the only, like, your way is the only way that you can get to heaven, I think it's pretty wrong to try to just keep that for yourself or to not even try to sell it to others. I agree with them on a bunch of stuff. I think that they may even have a point on a lot of their technological, like, fear of technology. I think that you have to have some... I think it's better to adopt technology as it comes along, but to have a very strict moral framework of how you do it.
Yeah. Well, they kind of do that.
They do. They do. They just do it a lot slower than I think is could be done.
Well, and some of their rules are really weird, but... like, yeah, you can't have hot water coming out of the same sink as your cold water, depending on which Amish you are.
Yeah, and there's also the whole thing of, like, okay, at what point are you actually following the rules? At what point is this just, like, trying to trick God?
Well,
like, from...
But if you look at it more under the guise of penance, and like, mm-hmm. Mother Teresa, when she moved into her convent, she took all her nuns' beds and threw them away. I think it was her. Like, that's, you can say, well, Mother Teresa doesn't want people to have beds, but she wants to live apart from the world and be doing some penance that's worthy.
That's fair. I think it's weird when you make other people do penance, but I guess if she's the Holy Mother, then that would make sense there.
There's somebody in charge of the Amish church that's like, well, nobody's using hot water unless it comes out of a different sink. That's a weird penance,
It's really interesting when they'll split, because it's usually over stuff like that. You'll have one group that's like, we're going to get tractors and with rubber tires, and then another group, you know, you can't do that. And they take excommunication actually seriously, which I think if you're going to have a group that is going to try to continue to exist, you have to.
Yeah, that makes me think of that quote of St. Augustine you sent me. I'll post it down here.
Yeah. That's a book that I've been reading. It's from the priest that baptized me, Father Wade Mises, and I'm just starting it, just maybe the first chapter or so, but it's really cool to read something from a priest that is quoting the early church fathers and really like methodically going through.
It's just remarkable how the early church fathers just sound like they're talking to our generation.
Yeah, but because sin has always existed.
Well, I guess they are talking to our generation. Like, St. Paul talks about how it's the end times, and so if it was the end times then, it's still the end times, so...
Yeah. I think a lot of the things that we see now that we don't know how to deal with, if we can actually look back in history and figure out where things are going and why it's so bad. And in one aspect, it's comforting. In the other, it's actually really terrifying.
I feel like there's some things that I just look back in history and be like, well, there's no parallel till today, so I don't know what's going to happen. But
I think we should just build a big rat city. Everybody moves into it. Except for me. You guys go live in the rat city.
That's kind of how it feels, though, with the way, like, trains coming into... You ever look at the trains going into a city and just how many carts or cart after cart goes into a city?
That's another thing that you could bring into the rat study is, okay, we have all these, like, I forget what his name is, but you have the guy that was like, you will own nothing and you will be happy. Klaus and there's Schwab. Other stuff, too. Charles, not Charles, Klaus. Schwab, but Klaus. Charles Schwab is an investment company. But maybe there's something to that, too. Like, what ownership is there if all you have is food and maybe you can find a spot to hide? You know, if you own nothing, you probably won't be happy. There is something in being able to go out and, like, make something for yourself, get something for yourself, and have a thing. You know, like, this wrench is pretty cool. And if I had no way of obtaining or buying it, I couldn't, like, further myself by fixing the boat I got to go work on tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, I guess I should say socket driver. But, you know.
Well, yeah. And I think when Klaus talks about it, he's more talking about how the government will have such an influence over everybody's life that if the government doesn't want you to have a wrench, they can say no. Because they can't take away everybody's wrenches, but they can.
I don't know. You look at some of the studies and like some of the books of people that in his circles, and they point towards like literally living in pods, eating government, like, gruel and having jobs that are given to you by the state. And things can be communally gotten, so, like, tools and gardens and stuff like that can be, like, communally obtained. And that frees up the world's resources for the 1% who can handle it better and to divide it up between all of us peasants. Like, if you really read into some of those books, that is the future that they're looking at. And I would be remiss in saying that I don't believe that I'm off on his name tonight, but Klaus Schwab doesn't believe something similar.
I don't think it can go quite that far to everything being like.
But have you not read the articles where they talk about, like, well, the bugs are going to take over, like, bugs are going to be the thing, and pods are going to be like, we'll have sleeping pods, and you'll be able to live at work. And, like, that's already starting to be pushed at, like, places like Google, where their pay doesn't, like, they're in these areas where they've pushed up, like, how much it costs to live to the point that you just have to live in these, like, Google pods. And now your employer has complete control of everything in your life.
Well, I guess that's kind of where it goes when the government or they might do it under the form of some private company, because then they don't have to respect any rights. But when they have ownership over you, I think they still have to give you more than just a pod and some gruel, though, because I don't think that's sustainable. Well, that's where the antidepressants come in. Yeah. All right, well.
No, but I also think you have a point. I think that what I'm saying and what I think that they're pushing for is not actually sustainable. I think they've tried it. They've tried to put everybody in concrete boxes and have them work at factories, and it doesn't work out. Yeah, concentration camps or
it works out short term. So
yeah, I mean, but like look at the Russian housing projects where they moved all the peasants out of the farms, and they pushed them all into these factories, and they brought up production,
and then everybody gets depressed, and you have one of the highest alcoholism rates in the world, and you starve to death. So it's not like it necessarily works out, even though they're going to try to push forward again, I think.
I think you're right in the fact that you do have to give people more than that. And all these communist countries eventually become like these weird, corrupt, capitalist, communist countries.
Yeah, it becomes kind of like a really just a corrupt state where you can have more if you play by their rules. Where it's I don't think they're going to take everything from everybody, at least long term. People are going to have stuff, but it's going to be like, if you're a good person, you won't be able to buy or sell. But if you're a bad person, you can buy and sell and have whatever.
But I also think that, I mean, in a way, that's already kind of happening just with inflation and everything else. I mean, I was talking to a couple of farmers today, and this guy was saying, you know, like, we farm 5,000 acres, and there's no way we could ever get more land, you know, or really do this again. We were able to, he's like, we got this in the 60s. We still farm it with two tractors that were bought in the 80s. And like, there's no way for us to really get to advance because everything's got so expensive. He was showing me his hay wagon that he had, and he said that, you know, a couple years ago he bought one for $1,000, and now this like same brand of hay wagon in a year has gone from $1,000 to somewhere around $3,000. And with the quick rises, he's like, well, I'm never going to be able to buy another one of these because the money I make on hay doesn't afford me to do the upgrades to my farm that I need. And if we stay on that, it's not gonna get any better.
I mean, you can't get rid of farmers altogether, so you're either gonna have to pay them more or have a famine. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of that.
He took all the farmers away and replaced them with people that didn't know how to farm because the farmers weren't very nice to him. So. But then Rhodesia, he had a famine.
Is another great example.
Yeah. So if you. That's one part of society you can't just say, well, go learn to code, like they told the coal miners.
Yeah. Yeah, and then they started telling that to all the journalists. I did like that.
Yeah, that was pretty
when all the journalists were getting fired in the layoffs, they're like, well, go learn to code. But I don't know. I think that there is some sort of push towards it, because these guys aren't going to be able to keep sustaining themselves.
Yeah, and you told me about the logging guys that came by and had already went out of business.
Yeah, so I was logging my own land, and I realized that I could literally make more money splitting firewood off these logs. I can take spell hardwood firewood, and it's going to take me longer to retain a profit.
Does that even include white oak?
Yeah.
You could split white oak for more than the price of white oak lumber.
Unless it's like veneer quality. But people will pay good money for oak. Like, I can get for a face cord between $80 and $90. And that's, you know, just sitting there. And then I can also get paid to deliver it. And a face cord is a third of a cord. And you can cut a face cord in about an hour. So you're looking at about $80 or $90 an hour if you could keep it up. But at the same time, you have to look at everything else. That's still really good money. Whereas if I'm in the woods trying to cut down trees and bring them in, they have to meet all these specifications. Maybe my logs aren't good enough. Like, some of the logs on my property aren't great. So I quit, and then the mills just dropped out.
Well, didn't you say that a lot of the mills, the bigger people could put in their bad logs in the center of the truck, and they would just count the tons of it? Where you're not big enough to even have a center of your truck.
Well, it's not just that. It's also contracts. So, like, some of the bigger guys can sell off weight. So you'll have some really good-looking logs, and you bring it in, but then you just start bringing in everything, and you sell off your tonnage on your truck. And it's way easier to make grade. They don't grade you as hard. You have a contract which guarantees higher prices, even if the
same way with scrapping, isn't it?
It's similar. Yeah, a lot of times the people who own the yards are actually also running. So, like, a lot of these lumber yards where they actually are cutting stuff have their own crews now, especially in this area. And the guys that don't are big enough that they have a point of power. So, like, it seems to me that a lot of these corporations are kind of squeezing out the little guys, whether it's on purpose or not. Mm-hmm. But this guy came by, and he was basically kind of, like, making fun of my setup. He was like, oh, you're kind of doing this and this, and he was telling me all about it, everything, and he came back by today, and he said, like, yesterday, and he was just kind of like, literally hat in hand. He was like, hey, I'm out of business. He said, hey, if you want to come get the last logs off my land, which I did the math, and it didn't make sense to go do, but it was kind of hard to understand, but basically, I guess he had a breakdown. Then he lost one of his contracts. Lumber went way down. He had to let some of his guys go, and he can't get them back. and he really can't afford to fix his stuff. I guess he let something go back to the bank, and like it just like everything hit him all at once. And this guy who's kind of like chuckling, like he wasn't mean or anything, but he's kind of chuckling at like my setup. And like I decided to get out before I lost everything, because I was looking at it and I was like breaking even. Like I was paying one guy and breaking even, and there was like no way I could turn around and make the money work without like all this extra equipment. And there's guys that are still making all this money, but it's like a really fine line with what the profits are. But looking at what I'm making coming out of the woods and what's selling in Lowe's, the money doesn't add up at all. So there's somebody that's amassing a lot of wealth somewhere in that line of, you know, lumber. And the either the prices just need to come up so that guy can keep making money, but if that happens, then the market's going to crash because the guys aren't, people are not going to be able to build anything. Or that guy's got to get rooted out. And I think either he's just going to be able to take a full monopoly, like there's going to be these guys that just take full monopoly of areas and are able to sell on the margins.
Well, in the past, you could build houses out of sawmilled lumber, but now they have to be planed, and you can't afford to plane anything small scale.
And not only that, they have to be inspected.
Planed, like inspected,
they have to have the right...
killed a lot of times.
You look at all this stuff, and it's like, okay, well, little guys can't survive again. So you want to have like a, you want to kill a chicken and sell a couple chickens. You have to be USDA inspected and have a federal seal, like federal inspector, and all this stuff come in and check you out. If you want to like raise rabbits, you have to have them checked for what is it that they get on their liver? Toxidiosis on their liver. And it's like, well, it's something that all wild rabbits just generally have, but now it's not, you can't have it. Or if you want to make, like, build your own house, well, your lumber doesn't meet code. So it's like, once again, like, if you're a bad guy and you just go around it, you can maybe get away with it for a while if you find an inspector that you can pay off, or if you just slab stuff up and don't tell. Maybe you can get around it until you can do it, or if you can just pay off
the government. There was an Amish guy a few years ago who, I guess he was selling some beef, I think, that he had butchered himself, but he didn't want to put citric acid on it because it wasn't... Mm-hmm. You think citric acid comes from citrus, it comes from corn. So, go figure. He didn't want to put corn citric acid on his beef for his customers, and the feds came after him for it.
Yeah. We've talked about this before, but I always found it really interesting. We had to stamp, and it was like the rule that we had to stamp all of these meat when I worked at a butchering facility. And I couldn't find, when you try to look up what is in the ink that we would use for the stamp, it's not public.
It's proprietary, yeah.
Proprietary plant. So you could be allergic to it, and then there's no way to even know what's in it.
And you knew someone who was.
Yeah, and so, yeah, I knew someone who thought they were, and so they would try to, like, go around, and then once again, it's like, oh, you either break the rules and basically live as an outlaw, or you can't have beef. Those are your options.
Yeah.
And that as I almost think that part of what makes societies fall is just the overbearance of rules. Because if everything crumbled right now, we'd have to rewrite all the rules, because... You know, the people wouldn't be cool with just re-implementing everything. Yeah. You'd have to rebuild all the systems and rewrite. So, at a certain point, the bureaucracy of just everything is just slowly crushes a society to a halt.
I think OSHA makes all the companies have you harnessed if you're above 6 feet.
I think you're right.
6 feet is nothing.
I'm taller than six feet. Yeah. Yeah, I'm a lot taller than 6 feet, and if I lift you to like shoulder height, if I fall down, I'm falling 6 feet.
Yeah, and if you got to be harnessed in, and so the way the small guys still get around it because they haven't applied OSHA to small enough companies, but
it's really interesting, the conundrum there, because there is a profitability margin of just not caring about human life,
mm-hmm.
And so there has to be some, but at the same time. If a company is just completely, like, that evil or just that uncaring, eventually they usually come to a halt. Unless they themselves have some sort of, like, basically overarching, like a coal company that owns everything and nobody can get away from them because they don't pay real wages. But in reality, like most people who have bad business practices, if you have bad food that's hurting people, especially if it's really bad, eventually your business is going to fail. Like if you're a butcher and people keep getting food poisoning, they're going to stop going to you.
Yeah, well, it's a little bit different with taking care of employees because a lot of the hazards employees aren't really even expected to understand, I guess. Like, I heard about people who used to paint cars back in the day, and they told you, yeah, wear a respirator, but a lot of the employers didn't care if you wore a respirator or not, and then they all come down with cancer later.
Mm-hmm. I imagine that like both our jobs could come up with that as well, you know, if we're not careful enough.
Definitely, yeah.
Of course, we're all probably going to get it from the multiple chemical explosions that have happened all around us.